On this week's show, Amazon and eBay both get sued. We've got some announcements from eBay Open and reselling news from Mercari, the post office, Etsy, and more. What is up, Galaxians? Welcome to episode number 219 of the Galaxy CDs Rocks and Flips Reseller Talk podcast. My name is Ryan, and I will be your host. We have got a whole bunch of reselling news this week, updates from eBay, Etsy, Amazon, and more, and a couple of really big lawsuits to talk about. We've also got a What Sold segment, as always, at the back end of the show with some interesting stuff. It was another pretty good week here at the Galaxy, and we'll get into that in the back half, so you'll want to stick around for that. But first off, reselling news.
News updates.
So there were two big announcements early in the week, last week. Lawsuits, one involving Amazon and one involving eBay. We're going to cover both of those in a little bit of depth, and then we'll get into the reselling news. This first one, this was reported on CNN Business and probably everywhere else that does anything related to the news. U.S. government in 17 states have sued Amazon in a landmark monopoly case. The U.S. government and those 17 states are suing Amazon in a landmark monopoly case reflecting years of allegations that the e-commerce giant abused its economic dominance and has harmed fair competition. The groundbreaking lawsuit, this article points out, by the Federal Trade Commission and the 17 attorneys general, marks the government's sharpest attack yet on Amazon, a company that, as you're well aware, started off selling books on the internet, but has since become known as the Everything Store, expanding into selling a vast range of consumer products, creating a globe-spanning logistics network, and becoming a powerhouse in other technologies, as we've talked about here previously, such as cloud computing. The 172-page complaint alleges Amazon unfairly promotes its own platform and services at the expense of third-party sellers who rely on the company's e-commerce marketplace for distribution, so folks like you and I. For example, according to the FTC, Amazon has harmed competition by requiring sellers on its platform to purchase Amazon's in-house logistics service in order to secure the best seller benefits referred to as prime eligibility. Requiring sellers to do that might be a stretch, I suppose, but to qualify for prime, you have to do that. But if you just want to sell on the site, you don't necessarily have to do FBA. So that's kind of a strong assertion, in my opinion. It also claims the company anti-competitively forces sellers to list their products on Amazon at the lowest prices anywhere on the web, which is something I have talked about on this show on numerous occasions. That one I think they'll probably be able to make stick. Instead of allowing sellers to offer their products at competing marketplaces for a lower price. And I've found that to be the case. I can get away with selling things for different prices on different sites, and I endeavor to do that because I want to be as competitive as I can be on each site. So this has been something that Amazon sellers have complained about for some time, and I think this one will be a real sticking point for, I assume this will be a judge ultimately. The practice is already the subject of a separate lawsuit targeting Amazon, which was filed by California's attorney general last year. The next steps in the case, the complaint was filed in the U.S. District Court of the Western District of Washington and seeks a court order blocking Amazon from engaging in the allegedly anti-competitive behavior. The FTC, they point out, is not ruling out a possible breakup of Amazon, nor the potential for individual executives to be named in a landmark antitrust case against the e-commerce giant. Ultimately, they say you will want to make sure that any remedy is halting the illegal conduct, preventing a recurrence, and ensuring that Amazon is not able to profit and benefit from its illegal behavior. When we get to the issue of remedy, those things are going to be the principles we'll be focused on. The suit, this article points out, makes Amazon the third tech giant after Google and Meta to be hit with sweeping U.S. government allegations that the company has spent years violating federal antitrust laws, reflecting policymakers' growing worldwide hostility toward big tech that intensified after 2016. This litigation, of course, could take years to play out. But just as Amazon founder Jeff Bezos and his spectacular wealth have inspired critics to draw comparisons to Americans' Gilded Age, so may the FTC lawsuit come to symbolize a modern repeat of the antitrust crackdown of the early 20th century. For their part, of course, Amazon is completely rejecting the logic of the lawsuit. They say today's suit makes clear the FTC's focus has radically departed from its mission of protecting consumers and competition, said David Zapolsky, Amazon Senior VP of Global Public Policy and General Counsel. He said Amazon's practices have helped spur competition, innovation, and selection across the retail industry. He argued that Amazon has fostered lower prices, faster delivery, and helped small businesses sell their goods. Some of that I probably would be willing to buy, but again, going back to the issue of forcing sellers to sell at the lowest price on Amazon, while it certainly has caused the prices maybe to be lower, I don't know if it's forced people to do that. You don't have to sell there. So I don't know. If the FTC gets its way, the result would be fewer products to choose from, higher prices, slower deliveries for consumers, and reduced options for small businesses. The opposite of what antitrust law is designed to do, he said. The lawsuit filed by the FTC today is wrong on the facts and the law, and we look forward to making that case in court. For years, Amazon's critics, including U.S. lawmakers, European regulators, third-party sellers, consumer advocacy groups, and more, have accused the company of everything from mistreating its workers to forcing, again, its third-party sellers to accept anti-competitive terms. Amazon has unfairly used sellers' own commercial data against them, opponents have said, so it can figure out what products Amazon should sell itself. That's something we have also talked about on this show in the past. And the fact that Amazon competes with sellers on the very same marketplace it controls represents a conflict of interest that should be considered illegal, many of Amazon's critics have said. Tuesday's FTC suit is more narrowly focused, taking aim at Amazon's behavior in two specific markets, the online superstore market in which its conduct allegedly harmed shoppers, and an online marketplace services market serving independent sellers. Amazon's deliberate self-preferencing of its own products in search results is an outgrowth of the underlying anti-competitive behavior at issue in the case, said John Newman, the deputy director of the FTC's Competition Bureau. This has been obviously coming for some time. We've talked about that numerous times on this show. Throughout, the FTC has scrutinized Amazon, suing the company back in June for allegedly tricking millions of consumers into signing up for Amazon Prime. They also reached a multi-million dollar settlement in May with the company over alleged privacy violations linked to Amazon smart home services. In one heavily redacted portion of this new lawsuit, agency attorneys cryptically described something called Project Nessie, which is an algorithm and pricing system that has allegedly extracted an undisclosed amount of value from American households. It is unclear what this project is or how it works, but the FTC alleges in the complaint that the company's product belies its public claim that it seeks to be Earth's most customer-centric company. Amazon did not immediately respond to CNN's requests about this product. The prosecutor, the head of the FTC, has been, as we've talked about before, after Amazon for some time. She wrote a paper while in college about Amazon and their anti-competitive practices. Amazon, for their part, has asked for her recusal from any lawsuits or litigation revolving Amazon. She, of course, has declined. So this has the potential to be pretty messy for Amazon. It's a pretty narrowly focused, but at the same time, broadly all-encompassing. It covers both their pricing strategies and third-party sellers and the way they interact with Amazon. If you are a seller on Amazon, let me know what you think of any of this. If Amazon were to break up, there's no indication what that breakup would look like, but I'm curious how that would potentially affect third-party sellers. So you can let me know down in the comments below if you're watching on YouTube, or as always, you can email me at galaxycds@gmail.com with any thoughts on that. Meanwhile, over at eBay, the United States government has also sued them, this over the sale of harmful products. The U.S. government on Wednesday sued eBay, accusing the online platform of violating the Clean Air Act and other environmental laws by allowing the sale of several harmful products, including devices that defeat automobile pollution controls. eBay could face billions of dollars in penalties, including up to $5,580 for each Clean Air Act violation, according to the government's complaint, which was filed in the federal court in Brooklyn, New York. The Department of Justice said that eBay illegally allowed the sale of at least 343,011, a very specific number, aftermarket defeat devices that help vehicles generate more power and get better fuel economy by evading emissions controls. For those of you wanting to know the math on that, at $5,500 per occurrence, that adds up to a little over $1.9 billion. So that is a potential big problem. Obviously, I think even if they're found guilty of this, they'll probably settle for less than that. But the potential is there for a, you might call that a life-changing settlement. Simultaneously, eBay was also accused of allowing the sale of at least 23,000 unregistered misbranded or restricted use pesticides, violating a 2020 stop sale order from the U.S. EPA. They said eBay has the power, the authority, and the resources to stop the sale of these illegal, harmful products on its website. The complaint said it has chosen not to. Instead, it has chosen to engage in these illegal transactions. In a statement, eBay, of course, vociferously disagreed with that, calling the lawsuit entirely unprecedented and said they would defend themselves vigorously. Maintaining a safe and trusted marketplace for our global community of sellers and buyers is a fundamental principle of our business. It said, indeed, eBay is blocking and removing more than 99.9% of the listings for the products cited by the DOJ, including, they say, millions of listings each year. That may well be, but I'm at 99%, 99.9%, it's hard to imagine how 343,011 of those things got through. I don't, it does not say in this article what the time frame is for that number of violations, but I assume it's probably a fairly long time. I assume that the EPA and the government have pretty much a zero tolerance policy for this, and I don't know how eBay can stop random one-off sellers from getting on there from time to time. It's a very big ask. But this is also a very big number potentially in the lawsuit. Moving on to better news, eBay is set to launch their first homepage redesign in 5 years. This was part of eBay Open. We're going to cover a couple of topics about eBay Open here. I'm not going to go through a whole bunch of stuff, and I'll explain why as we get to the second part of this. But the CEO of eBay said, many of you have told us that it's time for a site refresh, he announced during a virtual keynote at eBay Open on Wednesday. He said buyers would find it simpler and more intuitive to search for the right inventory for them, quote, which means it will be easier for you to sell. He said, this is a huge moment for eBay. The new design will be the biggest user experience change on our homepage in more than 5 years. He said they were also improving customer communications because that's key to how we connect with you and your buyers. How many times have you gotten an email and it felt like it wasn't that relevant to you? Well, we're changing that. He said, whenever we reach out, we should be telling you the right thing at the right time for exactly what you need. And we're doing the same thing for your buyers with more targeted emails so they can more efficiently find your items and your stores. We'll see how that goes. I don't know. I don't shop all that often on eBay, so I don't really have any firsthand experience with their user interface from the front end. I don't know that that is probably the highest thing on sellers' wish lists, is that there's a homepage redesign, but I guess kudos to them for trying something. So a lot of, as I read through a lot of articles from the eBay Open and the summaries of it, and then I got essentially two impressions. They were really key on two things: the magical experience that their new AI tools are going to bring to sellers, which they talked about apparently to the point of aggravation for most people, and their continued relentless focus on these enthusiast buyers and their focus categories. Also, to this article points out, the writer said, I noticed some sellers in chat windows during the event grew tired of the focused category strategy, which would potentially turn off new sellers. Apparently, those were the two primary topics of conversation. We have talked about both of those ad nauseum on this podcast, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it other than to say eBay continues to focus on this enthusiast buyer thing, claiming that the enthusiast buyer spends 9 times more money than the average buyer on eBay, and that's why they want to focus on them. And they keep pushing that as being good for all sellers. But the stats seem to indicate otherwise, with most of those buyers doing most of their business in those very narrowly focused categories. In addition, While they keep talking about how this program works, this article, which is over on eSeller 365, and as always, these will be linked in the show notes and the video description below. In the second quarter of 2022, eBay reported 17 million what they considered enthusiast buyers using the same metric of at least 6 purchases per year, spending at least $800 annually. 1 year later, during this year's eBay Open, the company touted 16 million enthusiast buyers, which is 1 million less than the previous years. This article says, how is this improvement? The writer says, I'm not against the focus strategy per se. However, I'm concerned that the marketplace has continued to lose active buyers, which we have talked about several times on this show, and only recently began to study that trend a bit. And now apparently the company may have slipped up with its messaging and also conceded that its active enthusiast buyer base has shrunk as well. eBay continues to focus on ways to make money that do not necessarily involve actually completing a transaction, things like promoted listings and promoted listings advanced and advertising and all of those sorts of extra services, which essentially take money from, and in some cases, even before a purchase is made, if it's the cost per click model, from sellers without necessarily even have a transaction completed. So while eBay continues to make fairly decent money, their user base has dropped, their enthusiast buyer base has dropped, their gross merchandise volume, which is the amount of stuff they're actually selling on the site on an ongoing basis, has dropped quarter after quarter after quarter for as long as this podcast pretty much has been in existence. So while eBay still posts some reasonably good numbers in the profit standpoint, the base of their business continues to erode bit by bit, some of which is their own doing, some of which is just there's more competition with sites like Depop and StockX and Mercari and so on. So, and there was nothing really that I gathered. And again, you can leave me a comment down below if you disagree. I didn't particularly see anything in the recaps of eBay Open that led me to believe that these trends are going to be reversed anytime soon. That being said, my business continues to be fantastic. We'll talk a little bit about it in the What Sold segment, but September, much like August, was a really, really good month for me. It was my best September ever and my fourth best month in the history of being an online full-time reseller. August, as I talked about last time, was the best August ever and the second best month ever. And those 2 months combined were only behind December of 2022 and January of 2023 in total. So I can't complain about my personal business. I've implemented some strategies to try to improve my own business, which I talked about back in the summer in a summer slowdown update episode. And those things, at least so far, have worked wonders for me. My business is fantastic, but I know other sellers, and obviously eBay at large, is not having necessarily the same experience. So let me know what you think of any of that. And let me know what your month was like. How was September for you? Speaking of, eBay has published the surveys of results showing the level of seller optimism. And this, to spoil the lead, runs completely counter to what you would see online. If you're looking at the forums or Facebook pages that talk about eBay or YouTube videos that talk about eBay, most people are, I would say, neutral to negative on their current experiences on eBay, but this survey indicates that that's not necessarily the case. They claim they surveyed over 4,000 small businesses who sell on the platform and published those results on Wednesday. It was conducted by GlobeScan, and the survey included sellers in the US, UK, Germany, Canada, Japan, and Australia. Among the key findings, eBay highlighted, 94% of sellers see a strong connection between eBay and their success. I would completely agree with that. As I've talked about on this show, probably in any given month, anywhere from 80 to 90% of my business is on eBay. If eBay did not exist and there was nothing directly to replace it, my business would be in big trouble. 68% of sellers said eBay helped them start their business. 76% say eBay helped them grow. And they say most sellers are optimistic about the growth of their business despite uncertainty about the economy. However, the numbers behind the statement regarding sellers' optimism show a surprising fact. While 68% of respondents said they expected their business on eBay to increase over the next 5 years, only 55% said they expected their overall business to grow in the next 12 months. Now, I'm not convinced that that's necessarily a reflection on eBay as much as it is uncertainty with the economy. So take that one with a grain of salt. Of that 55%, 21% said their business would improve a lot. 34% said it would improve a little. Of the remaining sellers, 24% said they expected their business to stay the same in the next 12 months. 14 expected to decline a little, and 7 expected a big decline. So again, feel free to comment down below what you think of the results of this survey and if you're in agreement or disagreement with them and what your standing is on what you think your business is going to look like over the next 12 months. I would probably be in that group that expects business to grow a little, not a lot. My business, as I've talked about before, I'm up this year versus last year about 10% in sales. So I have spent more money to do that using promoted listings and that, but that's part of the change in eBay's marketing. And if you want to continue to have some success there, you've got to adapt to what they're doing in order to remain successful. For me, it's working, but I'm selling more stuff to make a little bit more money, but it's not been huge. eBay has also announced some improvements to the authenticity guarantee process. We are excited, they said, to share an upcoming improvement we're making to the program for handbags. Our current handbag authentication process includes 2 steps, 1, authentication, and 2, listing accuracy. In some cases, items can be authentic, but our experts discover a discrepancy between the item and what was described in the listing. So you said it was very good and they decide it's good, for instance. When this happens, eBay communicates to the buyer what the discrepancy is and gives the buyer the opportunity to either proceed with the transaction or return the item back to the seller. In the new experience launching at the end of September, both buyers and sellers will be alerted when a discrepancy is found, which will include details of the issue. For sellers, you'll start getting notifications when a listing accuracy issue is found in both Seller Hub and by email. For buyers, listing accuracy details will be sent to your email along with the new notifications in your purchase history and view order details pages asking you to provide a response from a new inspection details page. They say they're starting with handbags in the U.S. this year, and then we'll start ramping up to other categories and markets early next year. So making some changes, I guess, to provide a little more detail and a little more information, particularly to sellers, about where the discrepancy is, and then to provide a what appears to be maybe a streamlined option for buyers to either proceed or decline to proceed with the transaction. Moving over to Etsy. This has been an ongoing concern on Etsy. Listings that randomly seem to be delisted by the bots on Etsy, the bot having identified the item as not handmade or not authentic. Etsy is really focused on trying to crack down on counterfeit goods or mass-produced goods masquerading as handmade goods, and it's created a lot of issues for sellers who do actually make handmade goods who have found their items suspended or delisted without much explanation or much recourse. They are now introducing a new program. Etsy is going to hide these listings until a human can actually review. Many sellers have complained that Etsy has become flooded with commodity items masquerading as handmade goods. In an effort to crack down, Etsy announced on Monday it would hide listings that are flagged by its bots until a human reviews them. Rather than completely delisting it, they're just going to hide them. Now, when a listing is flagged by our automated controls for potentially violating our handmade policy, it will remain active but not appear in search results and recommendations in order to give our specialists a time to review the listing. Our team will determine if it should be removed or if it can be sold on Etsy and be made visible again. This review process typically takes less than 24 hours. Of course, in the footnote, they said the vast majority of reviews will be completed in less than 24 hours, but it may take up to a maximum of 48. Any listings not reviewed within 48 hours will automatically be made visible again in search and recommendations. So that's going to streamline and speed that process quite a bit. Etsy said seller feedback prompted the change, and it referenced it was testing this new process. While most sellers said they would likely welcome this action by Etsy to reduce the sale of mass-produced goods that violate its handmade policy, the devil, of course, is in the details of execution, and some may be concerned about unintended consequences. In a post over on LinkedIn, Etsy expert Cindy Baldassi shared her thoughts. She explained one concern: what will the appeal process now be like? Training new staff will always involve a learning curve, and even the best training will still lead to errors. If the human reviews have a high failure rate, many listings could still be removed for weeks, as they have been in the past, and sellers may not have an obvious recourse. That may, in fact, be true. There are always going to be mistakes. There's mistakes with the bots. There'll be mistakes with humans. But I personally feel like this is a welcome change to the program. If they don't get to it in a timely fashion, it's automatically going to go back up. I don't see a ton of big downside in this. May there be individual listings that get caught up in a bit of a time warp and get inappropriately delisted by the actual human who maybe is making a mistake. Absolutely. I assume Etsy will clarify at some point what that appeal process looks like so that you can get those listings back up. But I think this, for those of you who make handmade goods and sell on Etsy, I think this is probably a pretty big improvement. They also made some announcements about their holiday season programs. Having your back more than ever, you work hard to provide an exceptional customer experience, but sometimes issue arises that you can't control. That's why during the holiday season, they're going to increase the Etsy purchase protection for sellers by covering refunds on qualifying orders up to $500, which is double their current coverage of $250. They say that means 99% of all orders on Etsy will be covered if they meet the eligibility criteria. So even more sellers will keep their earnings if Etsy refunds the shopper because of an unexpected issue with their order. They also note that they plan to highlight that purchase protection program more prominently in their marketing to give shoppers confidence and peace of mind that their items will arrive as expected and on time. So that's great news for everybody who sells on Etsy. If you're not familiar with that program, be sure you go over there and review what the details are. It has to be tracked. Ideally, you will use their shipping service and so on, but it's a pretty good program. And for the holiday season, they're doubling the amount. They've also made a change to their support. We're here if and when you need us. You can get support around the clock in our help center, including live support for most topics. Today, over 80% of all chats are answered within 1 minute, and nearly 90% are resolved in less than 24 hours. We're working hard to improve resolution times. We've also created a dedicated process for sellers experiencing issues with account suspensions so they can quickly file an appeal and have their case reviewed. That has, again, been an ongoing issue, accounts being suspended, temporary holds being put on. My understanding from talking to my friend Annette is she was inadvertently, it sounds like, placed on a hold. 30% of her funds were being held. As we talked about when we discussed this issue some months back, a little bit of a runaround getting some straight answers, but ultimately the hold was removed fairly quickly. But this is still kind of an ongoing issue, but they are updating their support to try to speed those processes along. So those are both great options coming from Etsy. Mercari has made an announcement. This came out last week as well. We're pleased to share that lower rates will be available for Mercari prepaid labels with UPS SurePost, which range from a quarter pound to 5 pounds. This went into effect on September 28th. You'll save with Mercari's most competitive rate for 2 and 3 pound shipments, which will be just $7.99. These lower rates on prepaid labels will be available on new listings beginning on the 28th. Prepaid labels are only available when shipping. This is for SurePost only. To and from the lower 48 states, so it does not include Alaska and Hawaii. Starting 9/28, existing listings who use UPS SurePost buyer paid shipping will automatically be updated with the lower shipping rates. It may take up to a week, they say, for those new rates to apply. That's for buyer paid shipping. Seller paid UPS SurePost shipping rates on all existing listings will only change on those listings if you update the shipping option to a new rate. So if you have seller paid UPS SurePost listings and you want them updated to the new rate, you're going to have to manually go in and edit and update those listings. So be aware of that. It is a money saving opportunity. It doesn't say how much. I don't use their shipping, so I can't tell you off the top of my head, but it is an update. It will be less. But if you have seller paid shipping using UPS SurePost, you'll want to update those listings. And last in the news, speaking of shipping, USPS has extended the grace period for moving to Ground Advantage. The original deadline for moving to USPS Ground Advantage is, at the time of this article, days away. It was at the end of the month of September. The post office has granted shippers some relief, and they've extended the compliance deadline. They continue to accept and deliver first-class packages and parcel ground select packages after July 9th when this new program went into effect, but the expiration of that was supposed to be September 30th. It is now extended to October 31st, so you've got one more month to get whatever you need to in order and get all your stuff onto the new program and off of the old first-class package and parcel ground select. If you're using eBay shipping service or Pirate Ship or any of those, that process has probably already been done. It was fairly straightforward. If you haven't updated your listings, you need to get that done because you're running out of time. So you got one more month. October 31st is the new deadline to get everything over onto Ground Advantage. That is a wrap on a bunch of news there. Again, let me know down in the comments below or shoot me an email if you have any comments, suggestions, or questions on any of that. And now, let's talk about some what's sold. It was a pretty decent week last week. I did not move 100 plus listings. I was in the mid 90s, so it wasn't too hateful. There were some interesting things. No massive sales here. There's a lot of $20 to $40 stuff, but it was all in all a pretty decent week. As I said, the month as a whole was fantastic. Definitely no complaints. Best September ever. This marks my 4-year anniversary as a full-time reseller, so I'm feeling pretty good about how things are looking going into the fourth quarter. This first item, the Holman Key Testament, Psalms Bible, King James Version, New Testament. It was described on the box as leather, limp, black. It came with its box. It was from probably the 1940s or 1950s. I picked this up at an estate sale about 2 weeks ago for $2. Had it listed for $24.99. It got a watcher. I sent out a 15% off offer and sold it for $21.24. This is a small, like, pocket-sized Bible. A lot of these, especially if they come in their boxes and are in pretty good condition, can bring reasonably good money. $2 into $21.24 is a flip I will take anytime. This was a neat book. I'm a big sci-fi guy. Anyway, Tomorrow and Beyond, Masterpieces of Science Fiction Art. This was from 1978. It was compiled by Ian Summers. Hardcover with its dust jacket in really great shape, full of all kinds of really interesting kind of vintage artwork. Obviously, this book is fairly old at this point. Some really cool stuff in there. It was another one that I picked up at a garage sale for $2, $24.99. Sent out an offer and sold this as well for $21.24 plus shipping. I've mentioned the garage sale that I bought a bunch of old, like, mechanical books and engineering books. This is one from that lot. I'm into this book for $1.15. E.A. Kinsey Company Industrial Supplies and Machine Tools Catalog, number 83. This was a hardcover. It was essentially just a catalog of kind of, it's a vintage catalog of tools that were not probably vintage at the time of publication, but a really interesting old catalog. Again, I'm into it for $1.15. I had it listed for $24.99 or best offer, received an offer of $21.99 and went ahead and sold that. Pays to look at some of these old catalogs. They're, again, like with anything else, they're not all big money, but this one was not too bad. I've had this book before. Anytime I see it, I immediately snap it up. The Prydain Chronicles by Lloyd Alexander. This was the book club edition omnibus, which included all of the books in this series. Really cool piece. Usually you can pick it up super cheap. I got this one at a garage sale for $1 a couple of weeks ago. It sold for $22.99 plus shipping. There are, I think, 5 or 6 books maybe in this series. Individually, they're worth decent money, $10-$12 a piece. This omnibus is worth anywhere from $22 to $25. First sale over on Etsy, an old book from 1931 from the Teenage Mystery Classics series, The Brass Keys of Kenwick by Augusta Heil Seaman. This book was in really nice shape for a book that's coming up on 100 years old now. Another one that I picked up in a big bulk purchase. I'm into this one for about 16 cents. It sold for $24.99 plus shipping. Railroad magazines, I continue to sell a few of these. At this point, they're fairly significantly discounted because I've had them for so long, but this was a complete year 2004 of Railfan and Railroad magazine, complete volume 23. Originally had it listed for $35.99. It's in my 30% off sale last month and sold for $25.19 plus shipping. Next up, another religious book. This is part of the big lot of books I picked up a couple of weeks ago. I think I got a couple of bucks in this. The St. Francis Manual, Congregation of Sisters of the Third Order of St. Francis. This was from 1952. Had it listed for $34.99 plus shipping, received an offer of $29, and went ahead and sold that. Again, these old religious books, if you can pick them up for a buck or two, a lot of them can bring $20, $30, $40 or more, as we'll see as we continue here. another one from a garage sale. I got this one for a whopping 50 cents. The Jesus Story, a blending of the four Gospels from White Horse Press. This was a red letter edition. This is a fairly contemporary book. This was published in the 2019 era, if I'm not mistaken. Again, picked it up for a whopping 50 cents and sold for $29.99 plus shipping. This particular one was in a blue leather cover. Nice looking book in great shape. Probably one to be on the lookout for. DVD. I don't pick up a lot of DVDs anymore, but I generally will look at music and concert DVDs. I was at a garage sale where I bought like, I don't know, 100 hats or something crazy. but I also picked up a few DVDs at that sale for a couple of bucks a piece. Here's one, Carl Palmer's ELP Legacy. This was a tribute to Keith Emerson from 2016, and it appeared to have been signed by Carl Palmer. Own it for a couple of bucks, sold it for $29.99 plus shipping. Back over to Etsy, a book from 1945, Ask No Quarter by George Marsh. This was another hardcover published by William Morrow, part of a big lot that I'm into for about 4.5 cents, sold for $32.99 plus medium mail shipping. Another book, shocking, I know. Seeing the Invisible, The Story of the Electron Microscope. This was a almost pocket-sized hardcover with its dust jacket, from way back in 1946, so fairly early days for things like electron microscopes. Part of a big lot that I own for a dollar. It sold for $32.99. This one actually went to Australia. A guy paid $32.99 for the book and $34.99 for shipping. He wanted it really bad. Another of those religious books. This one is really small. This is a like maybe 3-inch by 4-inch pocket-sized book, The Passionist, mission book, Thoughts on the Sacred Passion. It was published in 1912. It was an 8th edition published by a company called D.B. Hansen. I could not find anything on this book, so this is one that I listed at auction starting at $39.99. It unfortunately only got one bid and sold for $39.99. I'm only into it for like $2, so that's still a win. I was hoping that it would be unusual enough and catch enough views that it might do something more than that, but that's still a flip that I would take, and it's a book I would definitely buy again. This was an old book. So I was at a garage sale, and they had out in the garage on the table a box full of old, like 1920s era children's books. And I made a pretty good stack of them, and the woman commented, yeah, those are nice old books. She says, do you buy old books? And I'm like, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. And she's like, well, do you want to come into my living room? And she had 4 or 5 massive bookshelves full of books. And I said, if you don't mind, I would be more than happy to spend the next, whatever, half hour, 45 minutes going through and seeing if there's anything here I would like. And then you can let me know what you would take for them. So we sat and chatted as I went through the books, and I ended up pulling maybe 35 or 40 books, which she then went through and pulled out about half of them that she wasn't quite ready to part with yet. At the end of the thing, I got most of these books for $2 to $3 a piece, which was just fine with me. She was happy to get rid of some stuff. She actually took my card and said, hey, when I'm ready to get rid of more of these books, I'll call you again, but I'm just not quite emotionally ready to get rid of some of this yet. She's in the process of downsizing. I said, that was more than fine. I'd be happy to come back up and go through that process again. This is one of those books, The History of Ross and Highland Counties, Ohio, from 1796 to 1880, published by Williams Brothers, illustrated, leather-bound, actually from 1880. It was in, for a book of its age, I would say it was probably in pretty decent condition. A lot of flaking on the leather, very tanned, and a lot of foxing on the pages, discoloration and splotching and whatnot, but a really unusual piece to find something of that age. So I bought this. Again, it cost me $2, sold at auction, again, a one-bid auction, so a little disappointing there, but it still brought $49.99 plus media mail shipping, which was $8.42, because this is a monster of a book. And this will be, I guess, the flip of the week. It was the biggest individual sale that I had. It was actually three books, one of which was like $39.99, and the other two were not that much. But the three books totaled $59.97, which just goes, again, back to the point that I made, I think, last week about the bread and butter stuff, that $10 to $12 range book that I sell day in and day out, 10 to 12 a day generally, adding up to being pretty good money when you combine them with a lot of these bigger sales. So this was three books. The big one in this is The Canadian Summer by Hilda Van Stockham from 1966. If you can find this book, this was a sixth printing illustrated hardcover with its dust jacket, ex-library copy, so it had library markings on it. So it was in reasonably good shape, but a sixth printing really is nothing spectacular, and this book was still valued at $39.99. The other two books, not that great, really. The Secret Language by Ursula Nordstrom, also an ex-library book, and The Wound of Peter Wayne from 1961, also an ex-library book. All three of these were from the same estate purchase. I'm into the three of these for a grand total of $6, sold for $59.97. So I essentially grossed 10 times my money on this deal. I will take that day in and day out. So that, my friends, recaps a bunch of reselling news and a pretty decent, if not spectacular, week of sales. As always, I want to thank you, and especially all the new subscribers. The YouTube channel has really kind of taken off here over the last month. Views are up, subscriber count is up. So I want to thank all of you for joining this little journey, and hopefully you get some value out of it. If you did, do me a favor, hit that thumbs up button if you're watching on YouTube. If you're not a follower of the podcast or a subscriber to the YouTube channel, please consider doing that. And as always, share this with anyone else that you think might get some value out of it. Until next time, it's time to sell. Thanks, guys.
You have been listening to the Galaxy CDs Rocks and Flips Reseller Talk podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will catch you again next time.